I'm Adam Dupay, and this work was done in conjunction with my colleagues from UC Santa Barbara, Ludovico Cavedon, Chris Krugel, and Giovanni Vigna. And what I want to talk about today is how we can infer the state machine of a web application in a black box manner. Still not on. In a black box manner, and use and leverage this information, this knowledge of the web application, to drive a black box vulnerability scanner. So web applications, we all know them, we love them, we use them every day. We use them for banking, really sensitive stuff. But they have bugs. And in reality, they have a lot of bugs. And if we could do what Dickie George said in his keynote and spend 10 years and thousands of people to fix all these bugs, we probably could, but that's a little bit out of the scope of reality. We can't achieve that. So what we need tools, automated tools that we can run on these web applications to find these bugs before the attackers do. And these tools are split into two categories. White box tools, which analyze the source code of the application to understand and try and find vulnerabilities. These are great because they can see the entire application, but they're usually specific to one programming language and one web framework. And they also tend to have more false positives, where they report a bug on a code path that's not actually executable. In contrast to that, black box tools operate outside the web application. So they treat the web app as a black box and just issue HTTP requests and analyze the HTTP responses to infer a bug. And these tools don't care. They don't care what web language you're running your application on. They just care that you can talk HTTP and you spit back an HTML page. And these tools are actually used in practice. They're used by companies buy these tools by the ton and run these against their applications. But they're kind of, well, crappy, for lack of a better word. They get the lowest hanging fruit on the vulnerability tree. And what we're trying to do is trying to make these smarter, and let's try and raise that bar a little bit so we can find more bugs. So okay, a little bit more, how do these tools work? Well, they first crawl the web application, which I'm sure we're all familiar with from Greg's excellent talk. So first what they do is they crawl the application, try and find all the injection points, and then they're gonna inject some data to try and cause trigger a vulnerability and then detect that vulnerability. So in a very simple example, it's gonna make a request to get the index page. It'll get back some HTML, analyze that, look for new links, continue crawling. It'll get a new link, get another page. Okay, now it's gonna start attacking the server. So now this is checking for cross-site scripting vulnerability. So it's going to try and inject this script tag, get the HTML response, and then analyze this HTML response. This process actually takes a long time. For each vulnerability, you can have on the order of hundreds of different fuzzing attempts that you're going to try and do. And you have to fuzz per vulnerability per parameter. So you end up doing a lot of fuzzing requests. So a lot of tools take what they call the shotgun approach. And that's, well, instead of just doing one request, I'm gonna do as many requests as I can, just blast requests at the web application. And then I'll get a bunch of responses and analyze those. The problem here is this ignores a fundamental issue with web applications in that the web applications have some state. And if one of these requests, let's say this third request in red, if this logged the tool out of the web application or changed the state in some way, now all these subsequent requests are testing the application in a different state. So if we want to be able to really understand this, we want to be able to understand this web application so we can find the most amount of bugs. So let's go through. So what we're going to try and infer is we're going to try and infer which requests change the state and try and understand that. So let's look at a simple web application to kind of go through what this application is and what the state machine would look like. So we just have three pages, an index page, a login page, and a view page. And the view page is hidden basically behind the login page. So you have to access the login page before you can access anything else. So we first make a request to the index page, then we'll make a request to the login page. Now we can see the view page, and now we can access that page. Great. So what does this state machine look like? What's our end goal? What do we want our tool to be able to infer? Well, what we want to do, so there's two states in this application. So a state graph would be states as the nodes and edges between those nodes as the requests we make to the web application. So in state 0, you can make as many requests as you want to the index page and you're going to stay in state 0. But when you make a request to the login page, now you've transitioned to state one. So now any request you make to index will keep you in state one, and any request to view will keep you in state one as well. And you can think about these state machines as, and when we consider state, we're talking about anything that influences the output of the web application. But we restrict that a little bit to be things we want to detect when a request we make changes the state of the web application. But we're going to do this in a way, we don't care where the application stores the state, if it's in a backend database or on the file system or in Memcached, wherever. Excuse me. You can actually think of these state machines and these state graphs as a symbolic Mealy machine. And this is all in the paper, I won't go into it, but for each state, for a given input, you're expected to get a specific output. And this is how we'll actually use, so we can actually, if you knew this graph, you could tell what state the application is by making a request to the index page. If you got back A, you knew you're in state 0. If you got back C, you know you're in state 1. Furthermore, when you're fuzzing this web application, you want to fuzz it carefully. You don't want to make the request to login.php too early, otherwise you'll transition. And what you really want to do, you want to fuzz the index page in two different states. When it's in state 0 and state 1. Why? Well, it's possible because the application's in a different state now that it's executing different code for that same request. And as a black box tool, you want to maximize the amount of code that's executed by your tool, because you're never going to find a bug along a code path that you don't execute. So how can we do this? How can we actually infer this in a black box manner? So what we operate on to infer the state, we operate on the series of requests and responses. So here on that previous example, we accessed the index page, we got back A, we made a request to the login page, we got back some response B, another accessed the index page, got a response C, and then accessed the view page and got back D. And I've abstracted kind of the responses here. So our key insight here and our key intuition is that we can detect when the state has changed when we make identical requests in different points in time and get different responses. Because a Mealy machine, when given identical input in the same state, will produce the same output. So just by looking at this trace, we can tell, hey, something between these two requests changed the state. So that's kind of the key insight. This is how we can tell, hey, something's changed. But we need more. This isn't the only thing to build these graphs. We want to be able to tell, so you should be asking yourselves, well, how do you tell whether two responses and web pages are the same? So we have a technique to cluster web pages so we can say if they're the same or different. Now when we detect a state change, we have a list of requests and responses with the same request at both ends. But we want to know what requests in this list change the state, so we have to determine that. And finally, detecting when a state change just tells you that you're in a new state. So if we do this, we'll just say, okay, we were in state 0. Oh, detected a change. I'm in state 1. Now I'm in state 2. Now I'm in state 3. But we want to be able to tell, are we back in state 0? Are we flipping between logging in and logging out? Did we add an item to our cart and then remove that item from the cart? So how does that state transition work? So we want to be able to collapse similar states together. So first I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about clustering similar pages. So the basic problem is we have these four HTML pages, right? And we want to say, well, these three we're going to consider the same, and this fourth one is different. So the key insight here, and I think what's actually really cool about this approach, is that we're going to use the links on the page to determine the similarities. And we do this because the links in a web application tell you what you can do with the application. So when a user can do something new, that means the state must have changed. So we're going to take the links and we're going to kind of abstract these links out for each web page. So we have four link vectors here. The details I won't go into, but we'd kind of look and our algorithm would look and say, okay, on this fourth page it has two links on it that no other page has. So that's definitely going to be different. And what about these three pages? Well, they're very similar except for this ID parameter is different. But our algorithm would say, well, that's close enough. Let's end up clustering those together. So that's at a kind of a very high level how that works. Now in the next part, we have a list of requests and responses. And at the head and the tail, we have identical requests where we got different responses. Now the goal is we want to detect which request we made change the state. So here we use a heuristic and we say, well, post requests are more likely than get requests because of the HTTP standard. We say that a request that's newer is more likely to change the state than a request that's older. And the intuition there is that if an older request had changed the state, we hopefully would have detected it before now. And then finally, we think it's more likely that a request that we've seen change the state in the past is more likely than a request that we've made 100 times that has never changed the state. So we kind of keep all that in mind. So our algorithm would run this and we'd spit out, hey, post to the login form is the request that changed the state here. So like I said, once we detect this, we now have a series of states. So in this case, 0 through 5. And we want to be able to say, well, which states are the same? And so what we do, we've actually reduced this to a graph coloring problem, where here the nodes are the states that we've inferred. And we're going to draw an edge between these nodes when these states cannot be the same. So the simplest rule is we know that 0 and 1 cannot be the same because we detected a change there. Right, so we're going to draw lines between all of these the adjacent states. And then we have more complicated rules that I don't really have time to go into, but so these rules would tell us, well, states 0 and state 3 can't be the same, states 1 and state 4 can't be the same. And so now after we've added all these edges, now we're going to color the graph. And we use a custom greedy graph coloring algorithm here that's going to try and minimize the number of colors. And I still won't go into the details here, I'll just kind of show you how it works on this specific example. So here, we'd color state 0, the first color, in this case it happens to be red. State 1 can't be red, because there's an edge between 0 and 1, so we'd color that a different color, let's say green. And then state 2 can't be green, but it can be red, so we'll continue on and we'll continue doing this process, coloring the graph. And now we're actually able to collapse the states. So we say that any states that are colored the same, they're going to be collapsed into the same state. So now we've actually inferred that this is some kind of loop. Maybe it's adding items to a cart, maybe it's logging in, logging out, something of that nature. And we also know the requests that actually change these states. So once you have a state graph and you've inferred this, we've crawled the web application, generated this graph, how do you use that to fuzz? Well, the first condition that we have is that we're going to fuzz every request in every state that it appears. So in this way, we'll get that index.php page in state 0 and in state 1. But then it becomes, well, how do you fuzz a request that changes the state? How do you fuzz logging in or something like that, or logging out? So we have an algorithm for that that I'm going to show in like pseudo Python. So we want to know how to fuzz this state changing request. Well, it's very simple. You first make the request, right? And then we're going to check, because we know what page told us that the state changed. So we're going to make that request to index and say, is it A or is it C? So we'll be able to tell, has the state changed? If it's not, then we'll just continue fuzzing. If it is, then we'll check. We'll say, is this state reversible? And by reversible here, I mean, are there a series of requests in the graph we can take that'll bring me back to my previous state? So can I make some series of requests? Can I delete my comment to bring me back? And if you can, then, well, let's make those series of requests. And then we'll do a sanity check, right? Are we back in the previous state? Are we where we think we are? And if not, then we'll actually reset the web application to its initial state and make all the requests up until that point to put it in the previous state. And we'll also do this if the state is not reversible. So if we'd made an unreversible transition, we'll also do that to continue fuzzing this request in a state-aware manner. So to evaluate our approach, we evaluated it against various black box vulnerability scanners. So we use Skipfish, which is Google's open source web vulnerability scanner. And it really epitomizes the shotgun approach. They boast that they're able to make over 2,000 requests per second to the web app on a LAN. We also use W3AF, which is an open source web vulnerability scanner. And then we implemented our approach in what we call the state-aware crawler. So we implemented the crawling and the the crawling and the state-aware fuzzing component, but we actually took and we ripped out the fuzzing component from W3AF. So the only difference between those two scanners are the way we crawl the application and the way we choose to fuzz the application. And finally, we used a recursive wget crawler as kind of our baseline scanner. So this is just the stupidest, download everything you possibly can on the web application. And so we ran each of these four crawlers against 8 different web applications. And these span tiny applications, 800 lines of code, to hundreds of thousands, 100,000 lines of code. There are different versions, known vulnerable versions of web applications, and bleeding edge, latest versions. So after we ran all these, we started to think about, well, how do you actually evaluate these crawlers? Because as I and others, we've done research into this, and it's actually really difficult. And Dickie George mentioned this too, that these crawlers actually get different kind of sets of vulnerabilities. So really, vulnerabilities are not one of the most important metrics. What's really important is code coverage. How much of that application can you actually execute? Because if you can't execute some code, you're never going to find a bug there. So this is what we used. And we used wget as a baseline. So we said, well, how much percentage improvement were you above wget? Because all it does is make get requests, and it just downloads everything, and then it's done. While all the other crawlers are making post requests, writing comments, actually interacting with the web application. So we use the percentage code coverage improvement over wget is what we use to evaluate the crawlers. And I've selected 3 applications here that I'm going to show graphically their results. So we had here in blue is our scanner, the state-aware crawler. In red is W3AF, and in green is Skipfish. So the important thing here is the difference between us and W3AF. Because any difference here is not due to the fuzzing capabilities, it's due to the crawling and the state-aware fuzzing. So here in Gallery, which is kind of a very simple application, we had a very modest improvement. In Wacko Pico, though, we had over 150% code coverage improvement over W3AF. And Skipfish, you'll notice, is actually not that far. It's about 50% behind our crawler. What was interesting about WordPress is that actually we were still above W3AF, but Skipfish actually got less than wget. And I still don't know exactly what happened there. I think they like gave up fuzzing this application for some reason. So I thought that was interesting. And of the 8 applications, we had the best code coverage of all of them. We'll see some other numbers in a second. So, but okay, code coverage, cool. Maybe, hopefully I've convinced you that that's a good metric, but what about the vulnerabilities, right? So a crawler found vulnerabilities in 4 of our 8 web applications. And so in PHP BB version 2, we were able to find 3 true vulnerabilities, and of those, one was one that no other crawler found. And so that's kind of the true column is the amount of true vulnerabilities that the tool reported, and the unique column is the number of vulnerabilities that tool found that no other tool found. So here we were able to crawl more of the application and use that to find more vulnerabilities. In Scarf, which is a conference management site, we found one vulnerability and we were the only one to find it. It was actually kind of surprising because it was a very simple vulnerability on a comment page on a paper. And when you look at Skipfish, you say, like, well, Skipfish, why didn't you find this vulnerability? It said for that comment page, I'm not going to fuzz this page because the content varies randomly. But the content's not varying randomly. It's varying because Skipfish is posting comments and changing the content. And so this goes to show you that you really do need understanding of the web application in order to properly detect vulnerabilities. And this result is also interesting. So Skipfish found 15 true vulnerabilities, 14 of which had the same root cause, so we considered that too. This is because they have a very good fuzzing component. So if it would have been in any way easy to rip out that fuzzing component, we could do that, but that's kind of orthogonal to our crawling approach. And finally, in Wacko Pico, so this is one area where W3AF actually found a vulnerability that we didn't find. And that was because it actually processed, it had some sophisticated processing of Flash applications. So the link to the vulnerability was in a Flash application. And our crawler didn't handle Flash applications at all, and theirs did. So that's why they were able to find that. So what do these graphs look like? Well, they're very complicated graphs, as you can imagine. I mean, modern web applications have many things. And this is from Wacko Pico, which is an intentionally vulnerable web application. And this is so complicated because there's a zooming in on it, there's a lot of things you can do. You can log in, you can write a comment on a picture, you can add a picture to your cart, you can add a coupon to your cart, you can delete items from your cart, you can actually purchase those items. You can then log out, register as a new user, and do that whole cycle again. And so the tool is actually able to detect these cycles and also able to group some requests together. So for instance, it knew that all of the add coupon to the cart actions were actually the same thing. And so I'd really like to impress upon you that I think it, I mean, I hope I've shown that it is possible to analyze the and understand the state machine of a web application in a black box manner, and that you can actually leverage this to improve black box vulnerability scanners. So from there, I'd like to open it up to any questions, comments, concerns. Thank you.
Questions? Please go to the microphone, state your name and affiliation.
Thanks for the great talk. This is Ken Grisser from Amazon. There's definitely a problem in the scanners and Spurpik, we are working on that. Did you ever had a chance to compare your crawler versus the commercial black box scanners?
We did not. Because I would have liked to, but they don't like me very much after.
Yeah, the reason that for this question is, in fact, they have similar methods, but it's quite hidden knowledge exactly how advanced they are.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to work with them to try and actually understand what they're doing and if they're doing something of this level, but yeah.
Thank you.
Ben Lifshitz, Microsoft 3Sage. So I can see how this approach would work for sort of a large legacy PHP application, and that's I think you've demonstrated that quite well. But you know, all the cool kids these days are writing single page JavaScript apps, and there is no, you know, the model of interactions there is very different, and you really need to understand what's going on the client in depth to be able to get any sort of coverage. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so our current approach doesn't support AJAX dynamic applications. It actually does, so it executes some JavaScript, so it will work in sites that gracefully degrade it with lack of JavaScript. Obviously, like you said, a JavaScript client app is not going to have that. You could think of using an approach like CrawlJAX, which is able to convert a JavaScript AJAX heavy application to something that's more static and analyze that. Otherwise, we were trying to think of how to do that. You could try and rethink what you think of as a request. And then you'd have to also, you do have some benefit though in a client application, right? Because you have that code, you have that JavaScript. So in some way, it's kind of gray box, like white box and black box. So yeah, I think you could kind of use these ideas, but you'd have to transform them to work in that area.
Hi, Kang Guk-ji from Columbia University. Thanks for a nice talk. And I want to know, do you have any idea combining your work with some kind of white box approaches, such as symbol executions or model checking approaches?
I have not explored that, but it would probably make this more effective. I mean, in both ways, right? You could use a white box approach to actually drive the black box fuzzer, or even to see, you could try using the white box approach to even try and infer this state machine, and then you could use it from either use that in the black box approach or validate it that way. So you could kind of, I think there are ways that you could kind of feed both into each other.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any more questions? Then let's thank Adam, and let's also hear it for us more.